start, so
hopefully you got a chance to see the Gemara on Daf Tes, where there's a lot of important points, by the way. Hopefully you saw the Gemara in the Chesed Beis also, since following what we spoke about yesterday, won't necessarily have a chance to discuss everything inside, but on Chesed Beis there are some particularly relevant points regarding kashrus, and regarding kashering, that are important to know, less about shechita, but more about issues connected to general kashrus considerations. And now, on Daf Tes, we're getting into some very yesodistic stuff. So we're going to, over the next few days, God willing, get into the sugyas of chazaka and sakana, and it's going to get us into rov. This is really some very major sugyas coming up, some really exciting things. I just wanted to not ignore one of the crucial details, or maybe some of the foundational details, of Hilchos Shechita. So here we find a reference to that, even though the primary Gemaras that talk about these ideas are really later in the second parak. A lot of it's in the second parak, Hashochet. But here, while we're in the neighborhood, so let's give some attention to the Psulei Shechita. What's known as the Hilchos Shechita, which is a phrase which has significance, as we will discuss in a moment. But the Gemara here says, this is seven lines down from the top, Amar of Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Kol Tavach She'eno Yodeya Hilchos Shechita Aser Lechol Mishchitaso. If you have a Shochet and he doesn't know Hilchos Shechita. So we've been speaking about in the past, what if we don't know if he knows, we don't know what his story is, or they have certain other impediments to carrying out a kasher shechita, so we could have all kinds of issues. But what if we know he doesn't know? So what doesn't he know? He doesn't know hilchos shechita. Then you may not eat from his shechita, because that's going to be very problematic. That's going to be very risky. So what are the Hilchos Shechita? So the Elu Hein Hilchos Shechita, Shehiya, Darasa, Chalada, Hagrama, V'Ikur. So we'll talk about what those terms mean in a moment. But what exactly is the source of these concepts? So the reference of Halacha, calling them by that phrase, is understood to mean that it's Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai. That this is a tradition that we have, part of the Mesorah of the concept of Shechita, which, as we discussed earlier on, the whole mitzvah of Shechita, if it's a mitzvah, or the whole institution of Shechita, as the method for kosher food, is to us a little bit of a mystery how to identify in the Chumash itself. It's one of the major references to Torah Sheba'al Peh, the idea of a Zavarta Kasher Tzivisicha, that there's some kind of a tzivoy that's not spelled out to us, and that this is conveying to us that there's a transmission of Torah that's not spelled out in the Chumash. So it's assumed that the halachos of Shechita that are listed here are halach l'moshe misina, and like I said, I just opened up the Gemara before, I happened to pass by Dav Dalid, and there the Gemara has the sentence, in the middle of Daf Dalin, Shehiya Drasa Chalad Dagrama Vikor Mik Siva, and what this is what you can find in the Torah explicitly. The Torah identifies these psulim. Presumably not. Presumably this is all Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai. And you find that when some reasons are offered, and we'll mention some of them, when some reasons are offered to explain why one of these psulim or the other is indeed an issue. So we find others saying, no, don't offer any reasons. It's simply Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai. We don't know, we don't have a process of determining these considerations. It's just a Mesorah that we have, and it's not based on anything. But others are not so sure, and as we'll discuss, you find some reason in giving for some of these psalm at least. And some of the Gemara does seem connect to Psukim. And to that, the Dor Revi, I think we've mentioned the Dor Revi. The Dor Revi was Rav Moshe Shmuel Glasner, the great-grandson of Chassam Sofer. So the Dor Revi, his Svarim are really fascinating in general. And he discusses this in at least two places in a Sefer on Chulin. because he discusses this on the Daf over here on Daf Tess. He talks about this. And also in the very beginning of the Sefer, so he has an introduction, a very detailed, orderly introduction to all Inyanim of Shechita. So a fourth or fifth section is about this also, and he says many overlapping things. And I think we mentioned earlier that the Dor Revi is also known, in addition to the Sefer and Chulin, he's known for his introduction where he talks about Torah Sheba'al Peh and the whole transmission of Torah Sheba'al Peh and the like. Shechta quotes it often. So here, this issue brings together his two specialties. It brings together Chulin and the transmission of the Torah Sheba'al Peh. So as you can imagine, he's particularly interested in how exactly we know these things. And he suggests, this is what he writes on the Daf, he says, he doesn't understand why you call this Halacha Moshe Sinai, because all of it has a source, all of it can be understood from Sukkim, and specifically the idea of Vishachat that we do find in the context of Kachim, we understand, tells us how the process works for Chulin also. So essentially, in some of these cases, the Gemara tells us this already, but he says essentially it's true about all of them, that all of them, the issue is just not Shechita. That Shechita has a definition. Shechita means a certain specific way of killing the animal. And these are not Shechita. All of these affect the process in a fundamental way that it's not going to be called Shechita anymore. Shechita, the whole nature of Shechita, and this goes back to our core introductory themes, is that there are many different ways to kill an animal, but the Torah requires us to do it in a very specific way, which many, many, many Rishonim understood to be connected to Tzar Balei Chaim concerns and the assumption that this is a quick and relatively painless death. So whatever it is, it's clear that the whole chiddush of Shechita is that it's not enough to kill the animal, but the animal must be killed in a very specific way that apparently accomplishes certain goals, and however we understand them, but Shechita is the way it has to be done. So essentially what the Dor Revi is saying is that these psulim are there because they're not Shechita. It's not called what the mitzvah is. It affects in a fundamental way. Hi.
Why can't that be the halacha of Moshe Sinai, that is together, that these are not included together?
So he assumes, and in some cases you find this in the Gemara, that there's an intuitive reason to see why is that they affect it in such, and we'll go through the definitions, but that in each case it affects it in such a fundamental way, and in some cases one might be because of the other, they build on each other a little bit, that they are so fundamentally impactful on what the process is, that that's not called Shechita. So when the Torah tells us V'shachat, so we understand that it means a certain process which is not going to be fulfilled in these details. And part of what he writes there, and it's interesting reading his writings in general, because he has a lot of comments that he throws in, a lot of poetic comments, and he gets very dramatic. And he says, now stand back, and I'm going to explain to you something that's going to blow your mind. Essentially, it's what he writes in his language. So it's just kind of entertaining reading in general. But part of what he emphasized in this context specifically, he's very sensitive to the process of Drushas Chazal and the like. And this is more in the introduction than on this daf, but it's talking about this sugya, that Chazal's drushas are always going to be what's indicated by the text. The text is going to push you in a certain direction. And like he discusses there, if you could interpret it two ways, well, one way makes much less sense than the other way. So Chazal, not going to interpret it the way that makes less sense. They're going to interpret it the way that it makes more sense, and the way that it more contributes to the natural understanding of what's going on. So this is something which he was very focused on in his whole discussions of Torah Sheba'al Peh and having written specifically about Chulin. So here he writes that this essentially, you don't need Halacha Moshe Mi-Sinai for these psulim, they're all clear from the text. It says, so what is the reference to Halacha Moshe Mi-Sinai? So he says that is because you find that they also passel even if you also have a Kasher Shechita. You know, we know for a Kasher Shechita you need Rov. And so let's say you have most of the Shechita done properly and enough to simen Shechita properly, enough to make it kosher, but you have a minority of it that is done with one of these psulim, so the psul is going to disqualify it anyway. And the details of that are complicated because each one is a little bit of a machlokes, and we won't necessarily be able to get into all the ins and outs of Hilchos Shechita, but in theory, this is the case, that you could have a Shechita that contains enough to have a Kasher Shechita, but also has one of these psalim present. And that, he says, is Halacha L'Moshe Sinai, the idea that there is a affirmative psal. So here, if you want to be very precise in the language, he says, so what do we mean when we say Halacha L'Moshe Sinai, that these five things are poslim? So literally like that, that these five things are poslim. Because what we know from the psukim, or what we know misvara, we know that a shechita done in any one of these ways is missing the definition of shechita. So what he's saying is the chiddush of Halacha L'Moshe Misinai is that you could have shechita based on the definition, but also have the presence of one of these psulim, and that it will become an active disqualifier. So similar to what we discussed about the shechita sakum, is it non-qualification or is it a disqualification? So he says, from the pasuk and from svara, we would know that any one of these problems could undermine a kashrut shechita. But the chiddush of Halacha L'Moshe Misinai is that they also could pasul a shechita, even in the minority presence. So that's the Halacha L'Moshe Misinai effect. And what he's saying, again, to be very precise with the words, is giving them names, causing something that is a factor rather than an absence of a factor, is Halacha L'Moshe Misinai. That these, all of these things, if they were just a lack of something, we'd understand that misvar from the psukim, that's not shechita. But once they exist as independent identities that come out and cause problems, that part's Halacha L'Moshe Misinai, and that's how he understands it. Okay, so what do they mean? What are they? So the one that's most prominent and that gets probably the most attention in Shulchan Aruch, gets the whole siman. You got a chance to look at the Shulchan Aruch a little bit. Right, you have to, you know, skip around a little bit. You see that sometimes it gets into more of the detailed ones, you get a sense. But those two simonim, Chof Gimel and Chof Dalet in Yerideya, is where these are dealt with. And Shehiyah gets its own siman. It's all Chof Gimel, and the rest are all in the next siman. So what does Shehiyah mean? So Shehiyah literally means to delay. And we find that essentially if you stop, you pause in the middle of an active shechita, so then that's called shehiyah. So here again, there are some svaras you can find in the Achronim to explain what the concern is. Some say that it makes it into two shechitas, that if you stop in the middle and then you continue again, that's not shechita, it's two shechitas. Some say that there's a whole other issue. The Prima Gadim talks about, and others talk about, that if you stall, so then the blood gets absorbed in the limbs of the animal, and that's the issue. And once again, others say, stop giving reasons. This is just Halacha L'Moshe Misinai. It doesn't need another explanation. So how do you define what Shehiyah is in terms of a shear, in terms of counting how long is a problematic Shehiyah? So here, this again is spelled out in Mishnayos in the second parak, and Gemara's in the second parak, but you could draw a parallel to what you find, let's say, in Hilchos Tefillah. And so we know that if you interrupt in the middle of a tefillah or the like, so we find that it becomes a problem when it's Shah Kedei Ligmor Eskula, when the time of the delay is equal to the entire time you could have finished the whole thing in. So here also you have a similar standard, that if the pause is long enough that you could have done the whole active shechita during the time of the pause, so then that's going to be a disqualifying factor. So how do you define an active shechita? Does it have to do with this specific animal? So there are different views in Rishonim, and essentially some of them see it in terms of categories. Basically, there are at least, say, three views in the Rishonim. That should we distinguish between a behema gasa and a behema daka? And we'll say that a bigger animal, it's going to take a longer time. You have to pick it up to ready it for shechita and then bend it down so you can actually shecht it and then shecht it. So that will take a certain amount of time for a behema gasa. So maybe when we're talking about a behema gasa, one view in Rishonim is that's the shear for everything. which is basically the most makel, because that takes the longest time. So we just use a standard of a big animal, and however long it takes to shecht the big animal, so that's going to be the shear for all animals. And other Rishonim break it down into categories. And one way to do that is to say a Behemah Gasa has one standard, and if you're dealing with a Behemah Daka, if you're dealing with a smaller animal, then it has a different standard, and that'll be a shorter period of time. And in some Rishonim, so birds are included as smaller animals, and in some Rishonim, birds are included in their own category. And that, if you saw, the Shulchan Aruch discusses, and that means that birds, maybe counterintuitively, are more machmir by. Maybe it's not counterintuitive, depends on, I guess, what you would have guessed. But, so the fact that birds are relatively easy, you only have to shecht one siman, and the like, turns out to be a chumrah here, because it means that the period of time that would constitute shehiyah is very short. So therefore, one has to be especially careful in that case. And also, in the context of birds, this doesn't have this lifting it up and crouching it down part of the process. It's just the shechita. So the amount of time it takes to shecht the rove of one siman, that's a pretty short time. So according to at least some views in the Rishonim, it's going to be a much more demanding standard when it comes to shechting a bird than when it comes to shechting a large animal. So that was a debate in the Rishonim, how exactly you measure the time of shehiyah. And you see in general, it happens to be a lot of places in Halachos Kashrus, the Sfardim have a much more demanding standard than the Ashkenazim. And I always tell people that if you're thinking about converting, so Tola's not here today, it's his birthday, he doesn't make it on Tuesdays, but should wish him a happy birthday next time you see him. But so with all due respect to the Sfardim in the room or not in the room, but sometimes people want to convert for the kulos. You know, the kidneyist is not worth it, because the standards of kashrus are much more demanding usually for Sfardim, and they really can be quite restrictive. Yes, the slichas, although it's apparently a more cheerful slichas. But in any event, either way, it's the kidneyist is not worth it. It's not overall an easier standard. But here in this one area, in terms of the psulei shechita, if you read the mechabers and the ramaz, so you'll see in a lot of these cases, including this one, so the mechaber will say, you know, this tzad and that tzad and this nuance and this chiluk potentially, and if that's like this, it's kosher, if it's like this, it's not. And then the Rama chimes in, and our minig gets to say it's all trif. Again, anything close to any of these things is, the minig is latrif, as he writes there. So in this particular case, all of the five psuli shechita, you'll see that when you read through, if you had a chance this morning to see, that very often the Shulchan Aruch is being more nuanced and saying it applies here, but not like this and not like that. And the Rama is saying our minig is the whole thing is drape. Anything that comes close to any of these concerns to be much more machmirah. Hi, sorry.
Is the shir shehiyah the amount of time it takes to finish a shechita, or do a shechita from the beginning?
So the way they describe it is from the very beginning, is to pick up the animal and put it down and shecht it. So it sounds like it's really from the whole process.
That's a different, I think there's like a machlokes like Kriya Shema, right?
Right, so when it comes to Kriya Shema and it comes to tefillah, so it's less obvious. And that's an interesting discussion. But here, they kind of talk about picking it up and putting it down. In the case of the birds, in the case of Ophis, it's a machlokes, whether that's a part of it or not. In the case of the behemos, that's explicitly there, the time it takes to pick it up and to crouch it down is included in the process. Okay, so without being Meshaha and Shehiya, so what else do you have? So you have Darasa. So what's Darasa? So Darasa is that you push down instead of across. And the way it's described, like in the Shulchan Aruch, like you're chopping up vegetables. So you cut like this, you're chopping up a vegetable, and Shechita is supposed to be like this, not supposed to be like this. So pushing down is a concern of Darasa. And you know, there also, the concern seems to be that it's not Shechita, and that's not the process. That the process of Shechita is specifically supposed to be this very quick, painless, across motion. And Darasa is going to be different. They also compare it to a sword. Yes. strike somebody with a sword, and it's not what shechita is supposed to be. And so therefore that's a psul also. So here you find that emerges from the Mishnah and the Gemara also, that you're going to need, in order for it to be the right kind of a cut, you're going to need a knife that is longer than the neck of the animal. If the knife is the same length as the neck of the animal, or if it is shorter than the neck of the animal, so then by its very nature, the process is going to be one of pushing it in rather than going across. So understand it's supposed to be a neck's length beyond, based on the neck length of that particular animal. So if it's doing one animal at a time, then it should be twice the length of the neck of that animal. Mishnah does talk about maybe you want to show off to your friends, you're shechting two animals at once, so then it would be three neck lengths, because don't try this at home, but it means one extra neck length. And then the question is, here again, you have a difference between the Mechaber and the Ramah, how machmer you are on that, because the Shulchan Aruch writes that the idea that you need it to be longer, so that's assuming that you're only going once. So you go once like that, or once like this, moloch or maybe, so then you need it to be longer than the size of the neck in order to be able to do it in a cutting motion rather than, let's say, a hacking motion, we could call it. But if you're going both ways, you're going, so then maybe it's possible to do that even with a shorter knife. But once again, the Ramah is not so excited about that. It says it still needs to be at least a little longer than the neck of the animal. So that's another concern, this darasa idea. What about chalada? So chalada means that you are essentially hiding the knife. Right, so what does that mean, that you are hiding the knife? That essentially the knife is going to be caught up in some part of the animal, and therefore that's also going to interfere with the process of the shechita. Question about that?
Is that necessarily so different from
Shia? Yes, although it could be related, right? And that could be that it leads to Shia. That's actually what the Doravi writes, that this leads to Shia, essentially, that because it's caught up, it's going to cause Shia, which is a part of his point, that, you know, kind of you can construct all of these psulim based on from each other or from the basic issue of, but right, he writes exactly that this is an issue essentially that it will cause shahia, but because it's likely to cause shahia, so the problem is itself, you know, that if you embed it somewhere in the animal where it could get stuck, or let's say it's an animal that has a lot of wool or a lot of hair that could get caught up in it, so then that's a problem that interferes with your ability to have a smooth cut. And it doesn't even have to be part of the animal. So if it's, let's say, there's some kind of a garment that is on top of the animal, and you stick the knife inside the garment and try to shecht from there, so that's also a problem. Now, the Rambam writes, even if the garment is just laying on top of the animal, other Rishonim understand, no, it means that, let's say, if it's tied onto the animal, so the garment is essentially, for practical purposes, connected to the animal, and then you put the knife into there, so that's going to constitute chalada, and that'll be a problem. Hi.
Are there any dads that say they should, if we're talking about like some sort of wool or fur, that you should shave it off or shear it or whatever first?
Sorry?
Are there any dads that say that you should like make sure like you should shear the area of the neck first, or if that's a thing?
Well, one way or another, to not let the knife be in an area where it's going to get caught up in something, because that's going to create a problem.
Yes, hi. Similar point to say, like, shouldn't there just be like a blanket rule? That is anything covering anything that can hinder the shechita should be removed before.
Is that a pond blanket rule?
No.
Because that was what the Rambam was saying, right? So if you have a blanket there,
it's a waste of a blanket. The blood goes everywhere. I've seen it.
It's a waste. There would be a waste of a blanket. But yeah, it certainly makes sense not to have something in the way. You can ask the shochtim how they deal with this.
The low plug,
but it's also a pun. Okay, so much you can do with that. But in any event, yes, it certainly makes sense. You can ask the shochtim how they actually deal with this. But that's the way. It shouldn't be caught up in anything. It shouldn't be inside the animal embedded. It shouldn't be hidden in the hair or the like. What's Hagrama? So Hagrama, the way it's understood, is if you try to shecht anywhere other than the makam of the Shechita. And even if you get it there also, say after the fact, but you come from any other part, so that's essentially an issue. And here again, it's easy to understand that that is a problem of simply not being Shechita. And the idea of Shechita itself, we know that the Tzavar is a very crucial part of the definition. And we discussed a little bit in the beginning that it could be that a part of the whole concept of Shechita is specifically in that place, specifically Minha Tzavar, because the blood will come out most, and the idea of taking out as much of the blood as possible from the animal during the process of Shechita is very possibly a fundamental part of what Shechita is and what the definition is. So it's not surprising to find this on the list, and again, to find it as something that could fundamentally change what Shechita is. Okay, so we're almost done. So what about the last one? So what about Ikur? So Ikur is actually a machlokas. We have to complicate the last one. So Ikur is a machlokas, a little bit what it is. And there's a lot to say about this, but we'll just identify the positions. So according to Rashi, so Ikur is that you shecht with something that is not a proper knife. So it's a knife that is not in proper shape. It is what we call a pagum, and it's a wrong form, it's not smooth enough. So essentially the problem is you're going to cause death in a way other than what Shechita is really meant to be. You're going to end up ripping the organs. And there again, it's very easy to understand how that goes to a fundamental Shechita definition. If it's, you're essentially strangling the animal, as you find the Rishonim discussed. And that's clearly not what Shechita is meant to be about. So that's, again, on a fundamental level, that's going to be a problem. Other Rishonim and the Shulchan Aruch, and many other Rishonim, understand Yikur differently. They understand that the Simanim of the Shechita have moved within the animal, so they're not where they're supposed to be. So Ne'akar, there's been an Ikur. So for you to shecht there, other than everything in its place, is going to be a problem. So then, what do you do about it if that's the way the animal is? So then there might not be anything you could do about it. It might be, that's how some explain, the Shulchan Aruch discusses this, that there is not a path to kasher this animal through Shechita. So nonetheless, it's not going to be a treifa, so it's going to, other aspects of kashrus, such as the beitzim, are going to be affected by this, or the milk is going to be affected by this, or it will not be affected by this, in other words, because it's affected by the fact that we won't designate this animal as a treifa because of this condition. But it may still be that it can't be used for meat because it's not going to have the concept of shechita available to it if that's the way the organs are. As the Rabbi points out, if they move afterwards, if you shecht first in a kosher way and they move afterwards, it's a different story. But to shecht the simonim when they're not in the right place, so that's how really, I guess most of the Rishonim and the Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam understand the issue of Ikur.
How do you know?
You have to ask the Shochtim how exactly they figured this out. Right? And maybe, and we see also you have to check afterwards, so that's also a part of it. But in any event, those are some basics about the Psulei Shechita. Everybody makes sense? Sounds good? I'll just mention while we're in the neighborhood also, we're just about going to run out of time, but just call your attention to it. Again, there's so many things here. But this Tosfos over here, Tap Tosfos Daf Tes, should be aware of. This is a collector's item Tosfos. This is a Tosfos that's often quoted. And there's a lot to say about the side issues here, but we're trying to stay focused on the Shechita. Let's call your attention to this. So right before right before the lines we were just reading. It says, "Amar Rav Yehuda, second line at top, Rav Yehuda Marav, Tamar Chacham, Sarek Shilmer Gimel Dvarim, Ksav, Shchita, Umila." So this is all interesting. What any of these words mean, or what exactly is the intent, especially, you know, maybe I should ask you to focus on this even more, because I said we'd talk about the Psulei Shchita, just in case you want to become a Shochet, you should know about them. So I hope, even if you won't all become Shochtim, I hope you will all become Talmidei Chachamim. So if this is what's necessary to be a Talmid Chacham, so maybe we should have spent more time talking about this Gemara than talking about the other Gemara. But I'll just tell you that there's a discussion Rishon what all of these phrases mean, what exactly is going on, Ksav, Mila, what exactly you expected to know about. Rav Nassim Gestetner in his Sefer on Chulin, the Nassim Pirio, he has a long discussion about this that's available on Hebrew Books if you want to look it up, if you're curious as to what all these things have to tell you. So there's a lot to say about it. And there's one added to the list, right after those three. So Rav Chanina Bar Shlomia, Mishmei Derav, Amar, Av Kesher Shel Tefillin, Berach Chasan, and Vitzitzis. So Kesher Shel Tefillin, this Tosfos talks about. And this is a collector's item Tosfos, because there is a machlokas about what exactly needs to happen in terms of the tefillin shel yad. That the Torah says, "Ukshar tamalais liyadecha." So we understand that you wrap the tefillin on your arm every day. Every word needs definition. So yad is in hand here, it means arm. And ukshartim, what does ukshartim mean? It means you wrap it on. But we don't assume that you have to retie, make a new knot on the tefillin every day. Well, most of us, our tefillin is already knotted, and you don't have to retie it new. But here, Tosfos quotes a view in the Rishonim that you actually did have to, you do have to retie it every day. And the question is, as Tosfos asks in the end, so how could that be that we know that as far as Hilchos Shabbos is concerned, that tefillin is considered to be a kesher shel kayama? So that was Rebbeinu Tam's question. Rebbeinu Elio, Tosfos quotes as saying he should retie it every day. You see, it's the third line of the Tosfos. The top here, Rebbeinu Elio, he had matzvah l'koshran, that every day you have to, the beginning of the line, that every day when you put on your tefillin, you have to retie them. And Rebbeinu Tam says, how could that be that that's considered to be a kesher shel kayama? So we know that the standard for a kesher kayama in Hilchos Shabbos is that it's going to last for more than 24 hours. So is there some kind of a stira here? Yesterday we talked about differences between definitions in Hilchos Shabbos and something else in the context of Shchita. So here, what about the definition of kosher for Hilchos Shabbos? Is that going to be a problem then if you say tefillin have to be retied every day? So maybe it is. That's Rebbeinu Tam's position, that it's a problem. But there is a mahalach in the Achronim, where Shlomo Warman has an essay about this, that we have a principle, those of you who are with us for Sukkah, 2 years ago we learned Sukkah, right? So Sukkah there, the Gemara talks about the definition of a wall, of a machitza, for the purposes of Erevin, for Shabbos, and for the purposes of a sukkah. And the Gemara says, even though the definitions are different, but during the week of Sukkot, the definitions match up. We say, migo de habidoflin in sukkah, habidoflin in Shabbos. That because the halacha recognized it as a wall, in that context, we recognize it also in the context of Shabbos, when they're coexisting. So the woman has an essay somewhere where he suggests, the woman knows Rebbe and Hank for many years. Fantastic Svarim, the Sheris Yosef. So, and I think the first Chalik of the Sheris Yosef, so he discusses that this cloud probably appears in other places also, this essential mutual recognition principle and full faith and credit. And I think the laws in the United States that if you get married in one state, another state, the laws are different, but they recognize what you have a driver's license from another state that has different rules. We recognize the rules in this area. So here also, maybe the halacha has a similar principle that even if two areas of halacha have different rules, but if they're coexisting in one space right now, we acknowledge the rules of the other system. So when it comes to Hilchos Shabbos and Hilchos Tefillin, so maybe the point is that even if Rabbeinu Eliyahu was right, then you had to undo the tefillin every day and retie them. But since for the purposes of tefillin, that would be called the kesher, so maybe also for the purposes of Hilchos Shabbos, also called the kesher, even though any other kesher would need to be a 24-hour knot. So maybe that's going to still be the case. The Adi Nezer has a tshuva where he discusses, he thinks maybe it should be a problem if you're going to borrow somebody else's tefillin and you have to resize it for your head because it doesn't fit. You got to untie it and retie it. So should that be a problem? Because you're gonna, it's not going to be a kesher. It's going to last 24 hours. The whole question of how exactly to relate to that factor and how it affects Hilchos Tefillin is a lot to discuss. But just again, just while we're in this neighborhood, just to call your attention, this is a collector's item Tosfos. This Tosfos is discussed often. This is Rabbeinu Eliyahu versus Rabbeinu Tam. And the mitzvah of tefillin. So I don't know if that qualifies us as a Talmud Chacham. If we, you know, we need to know, I guess, six things. And today we learned a little bit about Shechita and a little bit about Kesher. So we know a little bit about two of the six things. So we're hopefully on our way to becoming a Talmud Chacham. But okay, so we'll stop here. And so God willing, there's a lot of stuff coming up. Again, how exactly to be arranged per day, we'll see. But coming up now, we have Sugyos of Chazaka that come up already on this daf. We have Chamira Sakanta Misura, which is coming up here also. I might discuss that a little bit out of order just for the sake of continuity. But that's the top of the next daf. And then we're going to get into Rov and Chazaka and Kavana. Big, big stuff coming up. So it's we have some really exciting sugyas on the horizon. And stay tuned for how they will be arranged.